And now, Sci-Fi for Me presents Sci-Fi for Chicks.
Welcome to the newly rebooted Sci-Fi for Chicks podcast. I am Allison Isberg, coming to you from Baltimore. And today I am joined by Sonia Rodriguez in Corpus Christi.
Hello.
And Lobs from Milwaukee.
Hello, everyone.
And from the Kansas City area, we have Jennifer Wise.
Hello.
And Lauren Garrison.
Hello.
And live holding down the fort in the bunker, we have Kiri Evans.
Hi.
And today, we are going to be talking about one of everybody's favorite Marvel characters, Black Widow, Natasha Romanoff, who has been the subject of a lot of conversation recently. We've seen her most recently in Captain America Civil War, which is currently, as far as I'm aware, still smashing box office records. I think our first topic is going to be Black Widow's history kind of up to today and how we've seen her in recent years in the MCU. Does anybody follow her in the comics? I've read bios and things like that, but I haven't gone through and read all of the, you know, doorstop height level comics that they've got about her.
Nope, only movies.
Same.
Okay, well, yeah. From what I know, she started in the mid-60s, and she didn't have a costume or anything. She was just sort of a spy, a femme fatale who showed up in evening wear and a veil and just was very mysterious and did all sorts of things. And then she went through a period where she ended up defecting to the U.S. and joining S.H.I.E.L.D. and then did a lot of very secret – she's just been a secret spy from day one, and she's gone through a lot of different iterations and a lot of different things. But she hasn't been reincarnated or anything strange like that. She was, I believe, genetically altered when she was trained in the secret Soviet Red Room, and then that's given her abnormally long life. She doesn't get sick. She doesn't really age, that sort of thing. She's a bit like Wolverine, just was made that instead of born that way. And then most recently, most people will know her from the Marvel Cinematic Universe, where I think she showed up first in Iron Man 2.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And she was planted there by S.H.I.E.L.D. to keep an eye on Tony Stark. And then, after that, she showed up in Avengers. And then Captain America Civil War, which she played a pretty big part in that. She was one of the major supporting characters. And then Avengers 2, and most recently Civil War. And she's gone through a lot of hair changes. They seem to insist on changing her hair every movie, which I remember watching Iron Man 2 and looking at her hair, and it was really long and like perfectly like barrel iron curled.
The, like, studio ringlets, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I was like, okay, first of all, I have curly hair. Hair does not curl perfectly like that. Anybody who's got curly hair will tell you that's not how it works.
But if you're a genetically enhanced Soviet super spy,
I guess so.
Yeah. If it makes everything perfect. The hair, too. Not a curl out of place when she's kicking butt.
Did you mention Winter Soldier? I think you said Civil War twice.
Oh, sorry. Captain America 2, Winter Soldier, and then Captain America 3, Civil War. Many apologies. And her hair does a weird thing in Civil War. She takes a shower Winter Soldier. She gets out of the shower, and her hair is wavy, and then you see it in the next shot, and it's perfectly straight. And they're hiding out at Falcon's house. And I was like, Falcon does not have a flat iron or a blow dryer.
Oh my gosh, that's so true. That's right. I totally remember that when I saw the movie and then let it go. Because, you know, it's just movie magic. Just it let it go.
Again, as someone with curly hair, I'm like, that is not, no.
No. That's awesome.
So she's proven to be really popular in the most recent, you know, especially the most recent movies. But I think ever since I saw her day one, and again, this is coming from someone who hasn't really read the comics. So when she popped up in Iron Man 2, honestly, she was the most interesting part of that movie for me, where she just kind of came out of nowhere and was super badass and just like flipping down hallways and putting Tony Stark in his place. And I was like, no, I could get attached to this character. And then I proceeded to get very attached to the character. So I think we've seen her role kind of grow from the first movie to the last. So does anybody want to share their experiences and how they came to fall in love with Black Widow?
Well, the role that she had starting in Iron Man 2 and then the progression of the role is actually in tone pretty similar to how she was in the Ultimate Avengers storyline in the comics. So I will admit, and I hope that I'm not going to get popped for spoilers on this, because for goodness sake, guys, that came out when I was in high school. I watched the first few movies like, when's she going to betray him, you know? But it never seemed to happen. Maybe someday. But yeah, it's actually tonally very close to somewhat more recent comics. And that's kind of where I was already interested. What's gotten me more interested is actually seeing how the fans have responded to her. Because she's kind of become this polarizing force, which every time something comes out in the media that's either saying that she's being misrepresented or unfairly treated or something, just watching people rally around that kind of makes her more interesting to me as a whole.
Yeah, I can see that. I know she's really popular. Tumblr is one of my big social media outlets, and she is super popular on Tumblr. And I know when... When Andrew Renner came out and made those kind of...
Jeremy Renner,
when he came out and made those kind of not entirely polite, yeah, comments, people went nuts on Tumblr, at least, and I'm sure everywhere else.
Twitter as well, yeah, it exploded.
Yeah, as it should. I mean, I was really surprised to hear that from him.
I want to know...
And it was all three of them. Originally, it was Jeremy Renner, Chris Evans, and... Liam Hemsworth, wasn't it? Chris Hemsworth. I got the wrong brother.
I feel like I remember at least one of them, maybe Chris Evans, just looking kind of uncomfortable when the whole thing was going down. I don't know. I mean, it's been a while, but yeah. Carrie, were you going to add something?
Oh, yeah. I want to know, from everyone else's point of view, what is it about her that just makes everyone go crazy about her?
She's an excellent example of the female femme fatale, female secret agents archetype that I really liked. The first time I saw her was in the Avengers movies and Captain America. And that's what I saw her as. Oh, there's the femme fatale. Mm-hmm. She's capable and kicking ass.
Yeah.
But, I'm sorry, we have to edit that out.
Leap it. Like I said, I like her in part because of her portrayal versus the comics, and also because of fan reaction. But also there was this small part of me that at the time I had like fire red hair, and I was I was in shape and always looking for cosplay opportunities, and I was like, I found one. So that was part of
it too. That's always, yeah. I think I really loved that. Yeah, she just was super sure of herself. When it came to combat and when it came to tactics and, you know, doing what needed to be done to win whatever battle they were fighting. But what I really loved is that she was this strong female character who wasn't prominently attached to a male character. Mm-hmm. Most of the other female characters that we see in these movies, I think with the exception of Maria Hill and up until recently Agent 13, but, you know, Maria and Sharon we see less of. They're very much sort of minor supporting characters. I mean, Maria's kind of coming into her own, but other than that, most prominent female characters we see in the Marvel movies are attached to some male character. So we have Pepper, who's attached to Tony, and we have
not anymore, but
you know, she's, you know, that kind of girlfriend character. Peggy, who is super amazing, but she comes in, you know, attached to Captain America, and then, you know, Natasha just kind of strolls in, flirts with everybody, does whatever she wants, and is just completely her own woman. And we do not get to see that often enough in movies. That's what I really liked.
I liked her in the first Avengers. That's when I really noticed her. I know she came out in the Iron Man movies, but I didn't notice her until she came out in the Avengers movie. I like the way she's... And it's probably a lot of Scarlett Johansson, too, playing the part, because she's just amazing. But I love how she just comes in and fixes it. Whenever there's a problem and she appears, you know, oh, okay, she's going to fix it. It's especially when she's dealing with all those men. I don't know, it's a bad thing to say, but hey. but it's true. I mean, because I'm a problem solver, and I love people that solve problems. And she does that. She solves problems, and she... even does it even better in Avengers 2. I mean, problems are happening all over the place, and she's the one that's kind of like, okay, you fix that, you do this, I'll be back, I'm going to go handle the Hulk, and then I'll come back, and it better be done. You know, I just love that, and it just makes her so powerful, and she doesn't need a guy, and I love that she's not attached. She's not attached to anybody, and I know that this gets into a little bit of the controversy, but her flirtation, she uses it as a weapon. She knows she's got it, and she holds it in her back pocket, and she takes it out when she needs it. So I like that. I like that she uses that power.
Okay, springboarding from what you said in terms of, you know, her coming in and fixing it, like, when the men don't, I kind of thought that, I mean, I see it from the opposite side a little bit. I think that the writers, especially since it's predominantly a male writing staff, it seems, I think that they've turned her into just like a borderline Harrod. And there have been a lot of times that I'm just like, okay, that could have been, you know, if it were me, I'm a very sarcastic, impatient person, especially when it comes to fixing a mistake that my boyfriend makes or something like that. But there are so many times that the little things that she says or does, I'm just like, that really seems like you're trying to turn her into the bee, you know?
She rides that line, right? She kind of rides it. And I always wonder, is it the actress that's doing that, or is it the writers that are pushing her there? And it's so smudged, that line is so smudged that I can't tell what's the difference. I don't know what's happening. And sometimes she's got to me, she's got to write it, because some women like that. Some women like that she's going to be that way, and some women don't. So I think that's why it's smudged, so that way she can just be this awesome character that rides that line that everybody loves her, you know? So
mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see that. So we've had a lot of talk about her, you know, in the MCU so far, and as we all know, so far she's only appeared either as a supporting character or part of an ensemble cast, but there's been a lot of talk ever since she first appeared about her getting a solo film, particularly a Scarlett Johansson solo film, and recently Marvel keep saying, you know, oh, we're interested in doing it, we're planning on doing it, we're totally into it, it's going to be great, we're going to do it, but it's always we're going to and we're planning to.
Someday.
So, yeah, do we want to discuss why it's taking so long to get this movie together, and what sort of amazing world accomplishments will we see before that happens? I mean, maybe we'll land on Mars, maybe we'll go to Pluto. Who knows?
Well, I did theorize that we were going to see a Wonder Woman movie and Harley Quinn on the big screen before we ever see her, and whether it's this election cycle or not,
a female president.
You got it. Because
before a Black Widow movie,
if the corporate will is there, they would get it done. And DC, surprisingly enough, is doing a better job in this regard than Marvel.
Now, could that be because Wonder Woman and Harley Quinn are, at least for the casual viewer, better known than Black Widow? Because everybody knows, I feel like everybody knows who Wonder Woman is. And Harley Quinn's pretty well known because they had she was in the Batman cartoon series and things like that. But Black Widow, not so much. So could that be playing a role?
I think it's possibly playing a role. But even if you think about off the big screen, I know this kind of goes back to a Rogues Gallery conversation we had about how I'm more about the animated, but if you look at DC Animated versus Marvel Animated, DC Animated's had already several titles where you have a female lead, and even on Marvel Animated, we have yet to see Black Widow really taking the lead. I think the best one they had was the Avengers Confidential Black Widow and Punisher, and even so, there was still a lot of it.
Yeah.
So I don't even necessarily, I think that Marvel, this is one of the few places that they're just sort of missing the pulse of, you know, consumer desire.
I think they're so wrapped up in their phase plans that they don't have flexibility?
Maybe. They've made comments before about, you know, the rush to the runway, how there's too many models backstage.
Yeah. They have that set plan, and it's working for them. It's making a lot of money for them, and I just don't think they want to deviate from that plan for fear that they're just going to muck it up. So.
Yeah, because I don't think, as much as people are clamoring for a Black Widow movie, I don't think anybody is going to boycott upcoming movies for the next few years until they get a Black Widow movie. So if it's not bleeding the money, you know, then it can always be something that, that goes on the back burner.
It's something that they can kind of...
Sorry.
Like a cat with a mouse, like, yeah, here it is, and then just keep the people coming.
Pacifier. Very good, yes. Yeah. That's what I was thinking. Pacifier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm honestly worried if they do rush to make a Black Widow film. I'm worried it's going to take the same turn as Catwoman did, which doesn't have any affiliation with the comics or who Selena Kyle was. We're not going to get into that right now. Otherwise, I'll take over the whole thing. But...
at least you're honest in this.
Yes. But I'm concerned that they're going to deviate from what Natasha really was in the comics and what she was in the Avengers and go more with a finding some guy and attaching herself. I'm worried that that's what they're going to take with it. Like, oh, you want a female lead? Sure, we'll give you a female lead now, but now she's going to go run off with some hunkadunk and it's not going to be as great as we all want it to be.
Well, that brings up the interesting issue that a lot of people say that, you know, these movie execs think that female superhero movies are box office poison, because, you know, one of the more recent ones that everybody sort of remembers is the Catwoman movie, which by all accounts was awful. There was a Supergirl movie, I think like in the 80s or something like that, that had a decently big budget, but the plot was just completely weird. So yeah, are these movies, are they not successful because no one believes in them, so no one actually puts in the effort, or do people not put in the effort because they're not successful?
I don't understand why they're using those to prove their point.
Because that's not what Black Widow is.
That's what I don't get. I mean, they're talking about a movie that was made in the 80s, and then they're talking about another one bad, horrible movie. Oh, because those two weren't successful, then the next one can't work. What?
Exactly.
That's your benchmark? Come on.
Yeah.
Well, and I don't even think that it's fair to say all superhero, well, female superhero movies don't work, because talking about another Scarlett Johansson movie recently.
Yes.
Lucy, her first actual. That, I can't say it did great.
Almost $500 million, and it only cost $49 million to make?
Yeah.
That sounds like a profit.
It turned a good profit, yeah. I mean, it only has, like, well, I guess it's got a 61 on Metacritic, and it's not terrible on Rotten Tomatoes in comparison to the other ones on Rotten Tomatoes. But you look at this. Obviously, Scarlett Johansson can carry superhero. They already did it with Lucy, so I don't see why they can't springboard off of that.
Did anyone
and
else
I think
get...
that any movie made by Marvel is going to be better than Lucy, because I watched Lucy, and it was, honestly, to me, a lot of the plot seemed to surround things that were happening to her and kind of out of her control, and she was mostly just a vessel for these things, rather than her being completely, having complete agency of what was happening to her, which Natasha Romanoff would, because that's who she is. I definitely think Scarlett Johansson could carry one of these movies if they could, as we've discussed, squish it into their tight schedule, which is completely packed until 2020, which at that point, all those actors might be like, no, we're out. We need a vacation.
Yeah. That's a long
time. So we have one more topic to chat about before we're going to take a break, which is the Black Widow toys, or lack thereof. A lot of people have been talking recently about the lack of female superhero toys, not just Black Widow, but we had the controversy over Star Wars hero Rey not being included in the recent Star Wars Monopoly game, despite the fact that she is one of the three main characters of the most recent movie. The fact that there weren't any costumes for her, so people were making their own. And so there's been at least a couple of articles recently talking about how Black Widow now has at least one of her own action figures. But looking at that, I think, Anne, you were talking about the fact that it's a collectible.
It's the sideshow toy. Yeah, they're $200 collectibles.
So it goes from that very high end Sideshow collectibles to the one I saw at Target. It's a pack, so she is included with the main guys in their exclusive multi-pack, except the fashionista in me said, why is her hair day glow orange? It was painfully like 60s day glow orange. My only quibble.
Yeah. It's apparent that she's not being put into the stores and everything, and it's really frustrating because I have two young girls who I want them to, when they watch, like with their mom, the superhero movies, they see that character and they want to get that action figure instead of a Barbie. And if I was to take them to Toys R Us, we wouldn't find a Black Widow anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually, right before we were starting to record, I pulled up the Toys R Us website and I searched Avengers and I got 268 hits. Out of those 268 hits, 5 of those toys included Black Widow. Of those 5 toys, 4 of them were mixed Lego sets where she was one character amongst a whole bunch. In one of them, I'm pretty sure they got her mixed up with Sharon Carter because it's a set from the airport fight in Civil War, and there's a female character that's definitely Scarlet Witch, and the other female character, by default, must be Black Widow, but she's blonde and dressed like Sharon Carter. So I'm not sure what's up with that. And outside of those 4, the only other toy that was there was a stationary, like, display figure that you can't move, you can't do anything with, so it's clearly not for children. Now, to be fair, I did go on the Target website, and I found some more, including some costumes for dress-up. But of those costumes, one of them for kids was $40, and the other one was $55. And I don't... It doesn't seem to me that something...
Also, it's a really like, low-quality costume.
Yeah, it is. And it has fewer pieces than the other costumes do, and I don't think a parent is going to... I mean, parents here, you can chime in, but I don't think a parent is going to spend $40 on a costume set and say, go out and play with it and, you know, do whatever. Like, $40 seems to be a lot to pay for that kind of thing.
I mean, my kid's a huge nerd, and that's not how I let her dress up. Like, mm-hmm. If it's going to cost that much and... rip that soon? No way.
I don't have children myself, but I had a 9-year-old niece, and Marvel's missing some money because she had an entire Force Awakens themed party, mm-hmm. including cake. She got her X-Wing, and there's money to be made, and DC is doing a better job with this. When I go to Target, I see those, what is it called? The DC little, the girls?
Suicide
Girls?
I can't stand how they look, but I gladly buy them anytime my daughter asks for them, because at least it's something.
It's something, mm-hmm. and it's a positive thing to play with, and I don't see Marvel doing that.
Yeah. My one thing that I was thinking about is that perhaps, you know, they're kind of downplaying her because she is kind of a sexy femme fatale and uses her sexuality to get what she needs from time to time, a lot. And so I was thinking, okay, well, playing devil's advocate, maybe there's some thought that it's not like the best kind of role model for girls, which of course then,
no, then have you seen the Brat Dolls?
Justice, Wonder Woman very clearly uses her sexuality, and I'm not going to justify that to be like, she's a bad role model for my kid, you know?
Yeah, but again, in just trying to look at things, you know, from where other people might be coming from, and then as I was thinking about that, I was like, well, there's a ton of Iron Man, Tony Stark stuff everywhere, and his second movie, he went on a drunken rant, and then I think peed in his own suit, so if he can dress up as him, then we should have Black Widow.
Well, and also he flaunts the Playboy thing, you know, openly and plainly. And
he does.
Playboy,
he does.
In my opinion, is another word for exactly what Black Widow was shamed for.
Yeah. And if anything, Black Widow, if she does use her sexuality to get what she wants, that should almost be looked upon and rewarded because, well, not rewarded, but I can't think of the word right now. But we should be happy about that we're making women feel more comfortable about being who they want to be, and if they want to be more of a sexualized being, then they can, and there's mm-hmm. nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm. Or, you know, if you want to look at it from a different angle, I do like that point. That was something I hadn't thought of. But from another angle, it's also a way to draw attention to the fact that one of the only ways women could get what they needed or what they wanted historically has been by using their sexuality, because it's been one of the only thing that's been valued about women traditionally in Western society. So, yeah, lots of interesting discussion going on here, but we are going to take a brief break to refill coffee mugs, lemonade glasses, which is what I've got here today, lots of Memorial Day leftovers, you know, whatever our drink of choice is, and so we will be right back.
Sci-Fi for Chicks will be right back.
Hi, folks. My name is Timothy Harvey, and I am one of the co-hosts of H2O, the weekly show about everything genre that I host with Mr. Jason Hunt. And we talk about pretty much anything you need to hear about or want to hear about or didn't know you needed to hear about in the world of sci-fi, fantasy, horror, science fiction, all these great things that we cover every week. And it is just an opportunity for you to tune in and listen to some really, really fun stuff. H2O, scififorme.com. We'd love to have you listen.
Behind-the-scenes tidbits, production notes, casting, news, games, toys, reviews, interviews, we've got a little bit of everything. Plus, you can sound off with your thoughts and comments, and who knows, you might be in our next episode. Star Wars news, we call it Salacious Crumbs, and you can check out new episodes only on Sci-Fi for Me TV.
Now I have to second-guess a lot of life choices that I've made.
From the Fortress of Solitude.
Machine gun fire.
I don't think it's a matter of right or wrong.
Bad guy.
It's kind of won me over, and I'm not 100% sure how.
Got me in the holiday spirit, man.
No, all of you are dirty, filthy aliens. Get off my planet.
The Rogues Gallery on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
I gave it 15 minutes, and that was too much.
Where all of us have secret identities.
This is meteorologist Brian Busby. If you're traveling to a convention, be sure to check the weather. We have the latest forecast on the conventions page every week at scififorme.com.
Welcome back, listeners, to our newly rebooted Sci-Fi for Chicks podcast. Today we've been talking about Marvel's famous and or infamous, but mostly famous and completely awesome, Black Widow Natasha Romanoff character. So we've discussed a lot about her role in the MCU, and I think now we're going to be turning to her most recent depictions in Age of Ultron and Civil War. I know a lot of people had issues with what went down in Age of Ultron. A lot of people, myself included, felt that a lot of her character in the movie was just written very out of character and weird and maybe just shoehorning some stuff in that shouldn't necessarily be there. So, let's discuss.
So, yeah, I thought it was very strange going from Winter Soldier, where she had this possible attraction to Captain America, but not. Mm. And then they shared a kiss. But
that was to like distract people because public displays of affection make people very uncomfortable.
Yes.
Yeah, that happened even in the Justice League cartoons, mm-hmm. when they were trying to escape the Thanagarians, but I'm not going to go into that.
Right, but she definitely flirted heavily with Captain America. We can agree. She did.
Yeah.
She even played the, "Well, let me set you up on a blind date" thing when really she wants to be with him. But then all of a sudden it's, boom, go calm down the Hulk. And then it's just, you can see that scene right there where she goes to calm him down. There's something, she's definitely using, you know, her womanly wiles, I guess.
It's a lullaby.
Yes. To calm him down. And it's just, from then on, it gets weird.
It really, that whole romance thing, I didn't get to see the movie in theaters. I watched it later, and I was watching it on a plane on my own tablet, and I just kept, like, I must have looked crazy, because I just kept rolling my eyes at everyone on the plane. I was like, what? It was like the whole movie was, it was rolling along, it was okay, and then all of a sudden we just came to a dead stop, and we all had to stare at this awkward thing happening on screen for like 15 minutes, and I was like, well, okay, so in the first Avengers movie she had all this awesome chemistry with Hawkeye, and now Hawkeye is married and has kids and that's cool, but now she's what? It was just ugh.
You know, I rewatched the first Avengers movie when we got the glimpse of Hawkeye and his kids and everything, because I was like, did I misinterpret literally their entire interaction? But no, I mean, if you go back to it, it still really looks like flirting. It doesn't look like we've been friends a long time. You're the godmother of my children. It looks like we do naughty things when the cameras aren't on us, you know?
Yep. And I went back and watched the same way after I saw Ultron. I was like, okay, wait, what? Went back and watched the first Avengers movie, and when I saw the first Avengers movie, I really liked the whole sequence where the hover ship gets hit and then the Banner hulks out and she has to kind of get away from him and she's clearly really freaked out. And then you see her after and she's very, very shaken. And the reason I really liked it is it shows that, you know, this is a really new, crazy, scary thing. This, as she says, this is monsters and magic and nothing we were ever trained to deal with. Mm-hmm. So I really liked seeing that human moment from her. And so I thought that was really cool. But I wouldn't look at that and be like, oh, those are clearly overtures to a romance as he tries to kill her. Of course. Definitely. Like, what?
Relationships of fear are clearly the ones we want to highlight here, right?
Right.
Cough, yeah. 50 Shades of Grey, cough.
It's that whole, well, if he hits you, he likes you kind of a thing.
Which a lot of girls are told as children, and it's a terrible message, and I hate it.
Yes.
That was really weird. And the other thing that people had a lot of issues with in Ultron was the entire sequence of her flashback to the Red Room, which A, it was cool to see the Red Room and her backstory, but B, she, you know, talks a lot about the surgery that was kind of done to her as she graduated and why she can't have kids.
Her final test, yeah. Mm-hmm. I actually have the quote pulled up. I was going to bring that up.
There
the exact quote was, you know what my final test was in the Red Room? They sterilized me, said it was one less thing to worry about. You think you're the only monster on the team? Which to me literally points to, I am a monster because in addition to all the other things that I've done, they took my womanhood, which bothers the heck out of me.
Yeah.
And that it doesn't even match with what they're showing on screen at the time, because in all of her flashbacks, they show her, you know, kind of on a gurney in the lead up to the surgery, but, you know, they show her not, you know, being fine shooting a target, but not wanting to shoot a real blindfolded guy. And they show her tapping out of a fight and her instructor telling her, stop pretending to fail. So to me, I read that as, she's can fight really well, but she has issues about just killing people. She doesn't want to do that. So I was like, wouldn't the final test be killing someone just because you're told to, rather than, you know, have
that
your uterus taken
final
out?
Test.
You know, it bothered me more in the sense that it was a cheap trope. Not so much. I can understand the character feeling that way about herself because of what was done to her. That's not my problem with it. Because if something like that happened to you, you may feel that way about yourself. But it's such an easy trope to have. I do not have children. There's this gap in my life. Oh, my life would be complete with children. That's the part that bothered me.
Mm-hmm. Or I'm damaged goods because I can't have children.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely seemed like basically what you're saying, I understood the trauma of having something done to you basically against your will, because at that point she's brainwashed, and I wish they had gone more into that like horrible things were done to me and I'm still very traumatized from that, versus the result of what they did to me has made me not a whole person.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost like they were kind of going for something and then just didn't quite get there.
Yeah.
But they didn't get there because they didn't take 2 seconds to stop and think about it.
Yeah.
Or to
they
even have like one more line of dialogue, you know?
They had so much stuff to shoehorn in, and that little bit got in, and unfortunately, I know a lot of us noticed it.
Carrie, were you going to add something?
Oh, yeah, I was just going to say that it all spirals down to when they were getting her prepped to be the super soldier, basically, that they, because she's a woman, she's going to have feelings, and those can't get in the way, so they have to remove her womanly parts, and therefore get rid of all the hysteria that is caused by those parts. And and also they have to get rid of the fact that because she's a woman, she, even if she doesn't have kids, those parts will elicit some mother type reaction, and we can't have that. And it's,
well, and I know it was uncharacteristic to see from Joss Whedon, because Joss Whedon traditionally gives us very strong female characters. And I, you know, we've heard that was editing, not what was originally presented, which, coming from the fact that it was a Joss Whedon film, like, I would believe that there was a better idea on the table for
her. Yeah.
But the fact that that's what we were given, like, presentation is the problem. Like, Joss Whedon can stand on the biggest soapbox in town and scream, it's not what I wanted, but it's what we got as consumers.
Yeah.
And even, like, even if it was edited to look that way, Scarlett Johansson still, like, in that scene, and also in all of her romantic scenes with Bruce Banner, doesn't look like she's either she's not completely into it or she's struggling to portray that out of character stuff well, because
yes.
she's inhabited this character for a long time, and it's kind of like someone looking at you and saying, be completely opposite of yourself, but still look authentic. Like,
yeah.
Scarlett Johansson can't handle that, and she's a really good actress. So.
Yes, I'm glad you brought that up, because I got that same feeling. I actually watched it again right before I came over here, and the whole time I was like, this feels so pushed. Like,
you know, they're
almost over the line trying to be too flirtatious, and I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah.
There's times where that kind of surprise relationship makes sense. And, you know, I love a good romance and I love soap operas and when it happens and it works. But this didn't work for me. It wasn't a surprise that I welcomed, like on Grimm, where two characters got together unexpectedly this season. It was a surprise where you think, WTF. Where is this coming from?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And apparently there is some talk that it was more Marvel's creative committee interfering with the movie, and that could have been why Joss Whedon left. I do know that he has straight up apologized for Age of Ultron. He's apologized for not being that great. And that wasn't just to do with Black Widow. A lot of it was to do with the fact that the movie itself was just kind of a weird mishmash and was like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Scary
because AI, you know. Artificial intelligence taking over. Yeah. That's fun.
Yep. But I'm also wondering if some of the reason it was so forced is because, as we were talking about before the break, one of the things a lot of us liked about Black Widow is that she wasn't strongly attached to or dependent upon a male character. She is her own character. And I'm wondering if the whole thing with Bruce Banner read really badly because they were trying to kind of shoehorn her into that traditional role. They're like, oh, we've got the girl here, and she's the girl in the group, and she's not attached to anybody, and that makes us panic, so we have to make her fit the conventions of the girl character in a female, in a, you know, male-led ensemble movie.
Heaven forbid a woman can, you know, be on her own for a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. And then that also brings me to the issue of her romantic, you know, basically the history of her romantic attractions. And as I was reading a lot of articles in preparation for this podcast, pretty much every single one of those articles, without fail, mentioned all of the different characters she has been attached to since she came out in the 60s. And a lot of comic characters have had a lot of things happen to them. The ones that have been around for like over half a century, you're going to have a lot of things happen. You're going to be with a lot of people. It's just going to happen. But I've never seen that emphasized with the history of any other character like I've seen with Black Widow. There's this like weird obsession with like, who is she matched with now? Which is honestly a little annoying.
Yeah.
And I know we were talking earlier about, particularly in articles about Winter Soldier, a lot of people talk about, oh, the brief romance between Steve Rogers and Natasha Romanoff. And Kiri, I know you were mentioning that she seemed to kind of be interested in him. And I'm going to go ahead and say that I didn't read it that way at all when I watched the movie. I obviously, she's really flirtatious. And I think Bruce Banner even says in Age of Ultron, like, oh, she's just that way with everyone, which up until Age of Ultron, she was. And I do think, like, I really love the Steve Rogers, Natasha Romanoff relationship, because I love that kind of camaraderie and friendship that they have.
Outside of, I mean, as a platonic dichotomy, I think it's amazing. I agree with you. I didn't really read romance because, you know, I've had guy friends that I've been friends with for years and not, you know, friend zoned or whatever, just the fact that we've always been close but not romantically interested in each other. But that's how we interact. You know, there's a lot of outside people seeing it as flirting, but it's just, you know, throwing it at each other one way or another. But it's not meant like, hey, we should get together, let's hook up sometime, you know. It's that's how a lot of people act these days.
Yeah, I really liked that it was a major, you know, movie that didn't have a romantic, like, there was him and Peggy, which was a romantic storyline, but it was very, very minor, and there wasn't the whole, like, you get the girl at the end, good job, man, good for you. Like, there wasn't that. It was great. But again, even though I think it's pretty obvious in the movie that that is not what they're going for, people still talk about, you know, years later, they're still like, oh, the brief flirtation with Natasha Romanoff. And it's like, what if it's just
Is it because of the kiss?
Well, a lot of people do bring up the kiss, and it's like, well, if you watch the movie, it's not like, if you're paying at all attention, that's not what it is.
Mm-hmm. For me, it wasn't the kiss that did it. It was, and I'm one of those people who generally has more guy friends than female friends, and I know from experience that when I had a guy friend that was single and I was interested in him, I tended to try and get him to set up dates with other girls. I was trying to pick the girls for him so that I wouldn't have those feelings for him anymore. And for me, that's what drew me to thinking that Natasha had ulterior motives towards, you know, Steve.
I could see that, yeah. All right, so I think that's a pretty good discussion of her life in the MCU so far. Mm-hmm. And we've talked a bit about the possibility of her being in a standalone film. But mm-hmm. more and more people now, especially given the packed schedule up until, I think we earlier we said 2020, but I think it's actually
2028.
Yeah, oh, 2028. So God knows where we'll all be by then. A lot of people have talked about the possibility of doing a Netflix series, either a mini series or like Daredevil, a 13-episode season, with Black Widow, with her history, and whatever Netflix wants to do with it. So what do we think about that?
I say go for it. I think it's a better thing.
I think it would be great. I think a lot of people, actually I've mentioned it to some of my friends, and all of them, their response was, yeah, but Scarlett Johansson wouldn't go for it. But as a concept, I think it's a better idea than waiting forever to. Because is she going to say, okay, I'll wait till 2030 to do a movie?
No. I think Scarlett Johansson would probably be on board. But then again, we aren't her, so we can't really decide. But I would like to think that she would be more on board to do a Netflix. I mean, look at Jessica Jones. She kicked ass on Netflix. Yep. And I feel like if you put Scarlett Johansson in there, it's just going to get better from there on.
Well, you know, X-Men series has shown that you can have multiple characters playing, like Jean Grey is a new actress. So why not just go with a new actress and go from there? Because you'd have more storytelling freedom, wouldn't you, on Netflix than pigeonholing on the runway waiting strip for the movies?
Yeah.
I think that would primarily work if you're doing mostly a flashback series, because Jean Grey, the new Jean Grey, Sophie Turner, that's in the past.
That was 1986.
Yeah, when she's a teenager. But they do have plenty of material for that. We've got the whole Red Room training thing, like her trying to, you could go for an angle where she's trying to maintain herself and her sanity and her personality in the face of all this brainwashing. And of course we've got Budapest, which everyone's been asking what the hell happened in Budapest since Avengers 1. Because they just had that line, like, you and I remember Budapest very differently. And I'm like, I wish I remembered Budapest, but it happened.
I want to know if we were to recast, would we want her to actually have that Russian accent since she is from Russia?
I would personally like to see that. That's how, when I was reading, especially the Ultimate Avengers comic line in the past, I always heard her character with a Russian accent.
Yes.
So it was a little bit weird to me when we got a Black Widow with a
very Americanized,
monotone American, like just flat nothing accent.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, you actually sound like a Midwesterner, not even somebody who has trained to sound like a,
right.
You sound like you took newscaster training.
Yeah.
Well, I'm, again, playing a bit of devil's advocate, I'm wondering if that's because, especially in the first movie, she's basically hiding out pretending to be an American, and she's been in an American organization with S.H.I.E.L.D. For a long time, and so I'm assuming, and we see this in Agent Carter, which does have a graduate of the Red Room in it, we've got Dottie, who's awesomely insane, and she speaks with a Midwestern accent when she gets there, even though she's technically Russian. And we see in the Red Room that they're training them to have that kind of very stereotypical Midwestern flat American accent. Now, that being said, once everybody knows who she is in the Marvel movies, then yeah, maybe she should have switched back to Russian. But I think at that point they were like, Scarlett's good, we'll just kind of leave it.
Then I have one more question that's been kind of bothering me a little bit, and it's not that big of a deal. But we all know that she has those longevity abilities of living for a very long time. How old is she?
I think she was born in 1928. Actually, let me see if I can confirm that real quick. But I think it was actually
talked about her living through Stalingrad, didn't as a child or something?
Yeah.
Like, but no, there's a basis in the comics for it. And I'm pretty sure recent comics too. I'm pretty sure it's 1928, but let me try and confirm that real quick.
I'm trying to remember where, but I'm pretty sure that I saw something in the movies at one point that says that she was born in the early 80s. I can't remember where. I'll have to see if I can figure it out and you know, post it on Twitter or something later.
It's saying she was born 1928, yeah.
So I guess this is probably where MCU is diverging from the actual... I'm glad I wasn't just making that up. Thanks.
Yeah. Though, if they were, especially if you go into a Netflix series, Netflix has a lot of flexibility to do kind of what they want, because the Netflix series kind of act more independently from both the movies and what happens on ABC on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and in Agent Carter, which we've talked a lot about this on Level 117, that, you know, all these different, the ABC versus the movies versus Netflix, they're all kind of going, they're like only tangentially linked at best. And so they could do the whole long-lived, however you pronounce that thing, in a Netflix series, and then you kick open the door for Winter Soldier interactions, which do happen in the comics. And again, according to my Tumblr friends, people definitely are shipping that hardcore. And you have that little moment in Civil War where she's fighting a, you know, re-brainwashed Bucky, and she's like, you could at least recognize me. And there's been a lot of talk about whether that means that one time that he shot her through her stomach to take out a target she was protecting, or does that mean recognize her from Winter Soldier, or does that mean recognize her from Communist Russia?
We do not know.
There's a lot of fan-made GIFs on Tumblr, is what I'm saying.
so not surprising. That's like 90% of what Tumblr is.
Yeah.
Circling back to the Netflix possibility, there was a big thing where Black Widow and Daredevil were a thing. If she does join into the Netflix universe,
could we have
an awesome... And then even bring Jessica Jones into that. I would love to see Jessica Jones versus Black Widow, not gonna lie.
And she's already been, she had a comic, we talked about earlier about how she had a comic team up with the Punisher, who's currently, you know, on Netflix too. So the field is wide open for that. And people clearly want the content. So yeah, a Netflix show might be a way to go.
What's the likelihood of that happening besides, as opposed to just waiting forever for a movie?
I think if you, especially if you're doing a flashback series, I'm not sure if Daredevil would fit in with that, but if you're doing a flashback series where you're doing Red Room, you're doing her involvement with S.H.I.E.L.D., all that stuff, you can pick a maybe slightly lesser known slash cheaper slash younger actress than Scarlett Johansson, who's got more time and requires less of a paycheck. Who could do that? So I think the likelihood is pretty good if someone can plant the idea in their heads.
I think Scarlett Johansson would be more open to it, because if you think about it, and you don't even have to do just a, here's what happened in her past. Like with a miniseries, even, you have a lot of flexibility to jump around on her timeline, you know, and you can wrap Daredevil into it and every really just so much crossover. But if you think about it, Scarlett Johansson, like, she's a mom now, and she's probably not going to be as easy to invest 7, 8, 10 years more at this point in waiting in line. Whereas if she does a Netflix series, she's probably going to have a different shooting schedule, which might be a little bit more flexible for, you know, being at home with her kid if she needs to. The money's certainly probably going to still be worth doing. And if not, they probably could find somebody cheaper. And then on top of that, it's going to be a longer commitment in terms of how much storytelling you have and how much quality there is. So
if Marvel was smart, they would do a Netflix, just because I don't see a Black Widow film happening, and not for at least 10 years. And if they were smart, Netflix is their wheelhouse. That's what a lot of people go and look forward to for a lot of the Marvel shows anymore. And if they were smart, they would definitely put her in a Netflix series instead of doing a movie.
Let's see if they have that flexibility in their phase plans.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the nice thing about Netflix is they don't have a phase plan, so it's a lot easier. And they've already done a crossover series, or they will do, sorry, they will do a crossover series, because we have Marvel's Defenders, which is going to start filming soon at some point. Mm-hmm. And that's going to have, let's see if I can remember everybody. It's going to have Jessica Jones, it's going to have Daredevil, Luke Cage, and Finn Jones as, goodness, why am I blanking on his name? The guy who doesn't have a series yet, Iron Fist. That guy, Iron Fist. And that starts filming in December. Goodness.
I like everything. That title much better, The Guy Who Doesn't Have a Series.
The Guy Who Doesn't Have a Series Yet.
Because there's only just the one, really.
Yeah. So, yeah, they've already done that. A lot of this is ground that they've already covered. They just have to, you know, cover more of it. And I'm also looking at an article here from UpRocks. And this is from April 16th of last year, where Scarlett Johansson said that she has discussed doing a series of Black Widow movies with Kevin Feige of Marvel. And she said, I've spoken to Kevin about it. Of course, we've had that conversation before. I think Kevin would also like to see a standalone film. Right now, I think this character is used well in this part of the universe, which, again, this is before Age of Ultron. But I think that Kevin, I mean, we've talked about it, and we both share similar visions for what could be a standalone series. And she said that at that point, her contract had already changed because Marvel didn't really know how fans were going to react to Black Widow the first time. And obviously, fans reacted really well. So then they added her into the Cat movies, which originally she hadn't been put in. So she says it's been a very good relationship going back and forth. And the one thing about working with Marvel is they don't want anybody to work on a movie that doesn't want to be there. So whatever you're contracted to should not feel like golden handcuffs, and they don't want that either. I'm always happy to put the cat suit back on, for sure. But of course, that was last year. Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of possibilities there. Honestly, for myself, I think it would be easier both from a budget and a flexibility standpoint to do a flashback Netflix series rather than a standalone film. But I will take both. I mean, that would be cool.
Yeah. Get a little bit of redemption for that Catwoman film. Show them what a real female lead can do.
Well, so if the money's not there in terms of doing a Netflix series with Scarlett Johansson, or, you know, if she's got other commitments or whatever, then at what point do you start looking at recasting? Because I think there are a lot of other actresses out there who could definitely hold down the fort.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Who do you have in mind?
Cassidy Freeman. She was in Smallville. I don't know if you guys.
Who did she play on Smallville?
Tess Mercer.
Tess Mercer. Okay.
She also did actually, the reason I know her is because she did this fantastic short, like 10 years ago, called Razor Sharp, where she was a corporate thief. And it was just, I mean, it was only like 20 minutes long, but it was really cool. I think she was in Longmire, too. I mean, she's got a really good track record. She's trained in a lot of the, you know, athletic dance. I know she does competitive volleyball and stuff like that. She's certainly got a good history in the, you know, traditional geek stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think she had a bit part on Once Upon a Time a season ago. But also, if you just look at her physically, Cassidy Freeman has really good bone structure, red hair, and blue eyes. So, well, blue-green. So you've kind of already got the look.
Yeah, I can see that. And, mm-hmm. And you know, an actor that's playing a younger version of, you know, an actor who's playing a famous character in another thing doesn't necessarily have to look completely like them. I mean, if you look at Sophie Turner, she's, you know, you can tell who she is. If you even just watching the trailer, you're like, okay, I know who that is. But she's not a spitting image.
So it's Cassidy's not a spitting image of Scarlett Johansson.
Do you know,
by any means, but she's
Emilia Clarke. What do you think about her as possibly being a Black Widow?
I don't think they could afford her.
You're probably right.
I don't.
She's very much identified with one series already.
Yeah, you'd have to pick someone who hasn't had.
Well, that's not fair really to say, because she's done Terminator as well. I mean, not well, but she did it.
And now she's in a new one, Me Before You, which
yeah, but I would say that neither of those movies, I mean, kind of Terminator, but at least in Me Before You, she's not, you know, a super butt-kicking, you know, superhero strong female character, which she kind of is in Game of Thrones. In Game of Thrones, I mean, especially after the last episode, which, since tomorrow's episode hasn't come out yet, I won't do spoilers, but after last episode, I mean, she's a strong female character, so I'm wondering if she could play another strong female character, not for her acting ability, but if she'd just be too recognizable in that kind of role. But she has already passed on any more Terminator movies, I think, which
I almost,
considering the last one,
a wise choice.
I almost feel like, though, picking a very recognizable face to play Black Widow would almost draw even a bigger crowd, because you're like, oh, that's Emilia Clarke. She played the badass Daenerys Targaryen.
That's true.
And now she's going to play another badass female? Yeah. Here's my money.
Yeah, I didn't necessarily need it, though, because think about, you know, when they took Daredevil to Netflix, and instead of going for a huge, you know, international superstar for Matt Murdock, they went with Charlie Cox, who's not unknown, right, but he's not a megastar, and he's certainly fit the part very well.
Yes.
I think you could get away with doing somebody who's either TV only so far, or just a little bit of film, not a huge history.
Yeah, and Scarlett Johansson, before she became Black Widow, she did a lot of different things, but I'm looking through her IMDb, and as far as I know, none of them were, like, majorly, you know, strong, physically strong kind of superhero characters. They were all kind of, you know, there were a lot of romantic characters and things like that. So you could take someone who was more well-known, but not necessarily in that kind of role, and if they had the flexibility, put them in there, and then they're still a recognizable name, but they're doing something new that isn't going to look exactly, or isn't going to be similar to something they've already done. Which, real quick note, figured this out the other day, fun little factoid. Scarlett Johansson was in a movie called The Nanny Diaries way back,
I've seen it,
2012 or something like that. And she actually, it's a kind of a romantic comedy about a young woman being a nanny in the Upper West Side, and her love interest is Chris Evans.
Yep.
So I was it showed up on Netflix, and I was like, whatever, I'll put this on. And then he showed up, and I was like, this is the most hilarious thing I've ever seen, because it was Black Widow and Captain America being like these young.
It's before the Red Room.
Yeah. So if you're looking for something funny to watch tonight, Nanny Diaries. It's hilarious.
I love the talk about the Netflix series, but I don't think we're going to see it, guys. I mean, it's a great idea, but they've dragged around the movie so long. I don't know.
Yeah, it's the pacifier, remember?
Yeah. Well, clearly we just need to keep making podcasts where we yell about how we should have movie series.
We've finally predicted a lot of the future recently.
Sci-Fi for Chicks listeners, get on social media. Start talking about how we're talking about this and talk about it yourselves. Which, on that note, let me tell you all the social media outlets we do have. For Sci-Fi for Me, we have Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Pinterest, Tumblr, Google+, and Twitch every Sunday, where we stream live gameplay. And then for Sci-Fi for Chicks, we also have our own Twitter, and obviously this podcast. We also have a whole bunch of podcasts on Sci-Fi for Me, and there's a Level 117, which is Marvel-centric. Come check us out. You can also email us at sci-fi4chicks@sci-fi4me.com and feel free to rant at us about anything, but particularly Black Widow. Just keep getting out the word about Black Widow Netflix series. And I think that's pretty much it for us today, unless anybody has anything else to add.
They could also, what they want to hear from us next.
Yes, definitely. Let us know what you want us to talk about next. We are open to anything, really, as long as we get together and drink coffee and rant about things. That's pretty much what we're here to do. All right, so I think that's it for us. Let me run through our panel again. Back in the bunker, we have Carrie Evans.
Over and out.
In the Kansas City area, we have Jennifer Weiss.
Good night and good luck.
Lauren Garrison.
Good evening.
And in Milwaukee, we have Ann Labs.
Goodbye from the Great Lakes.
And from Corpus Christi, we had Sonia Rodriguez, who had to dash off to watch someone graduate, which is very exciting. And last but not least, your humble host, Allison Isberg, from the Baltimore area. And that's it for us. Stay tuned for next time on Sci-Fi for Chicks from Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
This has been a presentation of Sci-Fi for Me Radio. Copyright 2016 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.